I hereby introduce to you Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, 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 welcome to Amazing FBA, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Michael Veazey. Welcome to the show. Welcome back to Q&A Tuesday. This is the fifth episode of this little series that I'm running every Tuesday. When I say every Tuesday, I missed out last Tuesday. I must apologize for that. I hope you weren't disappointed. If you were, I'm kind of pleased because it means you care and that you're actually listening. If you're not listening, there's not something I'm going to continue with. So let me know. Come to the Facebook group, www.amazingfba.com/FBF as in face, B as in book, and let me know. Now, a reason you want to get yourself over to the Facebook group is because I basically go in there myself every 2 or 3 days now and put some answers into questions people have. There's also quite a lot of collective wisdom building up as people get more and more experienced, and as we've got some fantastic people answering questions in there. There's Greg Jones of FBA Prep, or whatever it is called in the UK, who's a real expert at the supply chain, and Manuel Beckfire is not in there yet, but Peter Zapf is, who is in Global Sources. We've had Danny McMillan on the podcast, who knows a lot about Amazon ads and PPC generally. He's a bit of a specialist in that, and he gets in there sometimes and answers questions as well. So we've got quite a few expert people in there, so it's a great reason to get over there. Another reason to get over there is that you've got quite a high chance of getting your question aired on the podcast in this episode, Q&A Tuesday. So all the questions I do on this are generally taken from the Facebook group, and today is no exception, so let's get going. First question is from Anila, who asks, for products coming from China to the UK, how do you work out the duty value to put on the boxes to estimate for the taxes? It's a non-VAT product. So my answer is that the basis for duty is the commercial invoice value, which is basically the manufacturing cost plus the freight. If your supplier is handling freight, it'll probably be on the same document, which is also known as the total landed cost. Right, a couple of little notes here. First of all, the commercial invoice is a very, very important document. If you're not using a freight forwarder, then you need to handle this side of things yourself. So basically, your purchase order to your supplier needs to be very detailed, and it needs to include the fact that they need to put a commercial invoice outside and one inside every carton of products that you send in. Otherwise, you may have problems getting it through the customs, and that is true whether it's in the UK or the USA. This is like an international standard thing, okay? So the commercial invoice is a very important document. It needs to have your importer number. That's an EIN number if you are importing into the USA, and an EORI number if you're importing into the UK, and I think also into the rest of the European Union as well. Not something I've done yet. So importing into UK, I know about importing into Germany, France, I don't yet. But it's the same basic process. And that is the cost basis on which the duty will be calculated. If you haven't got to pay VAT, then you aren't going to have to pay a huge amount. Obviously, VAT is 20%. That counts for a lot. If you're in the USA, your duty rates could be anywhere between nothing and, you know, 15% or something like that. Most of them seem to average between 3, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9%, depending on your product category, right? So obviously, I am not a freight expert. I'm not a freight forwarder. And going forward, I intend to outsource most of this stuff to a freight forwarder. In fact, I intend to outsource every single bit of my business eventually, but that is next in line probably. So if you are a freight forwarder and you know better, please come to the Facebook group and correct what I'm saying here. But that is the basics as I understand it, and that stood me in fairly good stead. Apart from using a freight forwarder, the simplest way, once you've got your freight and manufacture costs, then is to go to dutycalculator.com, which I'll put in the show notes. You get a free few goes at calculating import duty. It will do US, UK, most places in the world really that you're going to import to, and it will give you country guides and all sorts of interesting things as well. So that's www.dutycalculator.com. That's what I tend to use. But as I say, if you have a freight forwarder or even a customs broker involved, then ask them. Don't try and reinvent the wheel yourself. Okay, on to the next question, which is also to do with sending freight around the place. But this time, this is a question from Ben, who says, hi gang, thanks for your help on my previous question. By the way, if you want to know what that previous question is, you'll have to go to the Facebook group, won't you? So www.amazingfba.com/FBF as in face, B as in book. So he says, here's another one. I'll shortly be sending my first delivery to Amazon. I haven't yet finished the send replenish inventory section on Seller Central yet, as I'm not ready to send. But when I am, I presume I'll end up on a page that tells me how to organize delivery with one of Amazon's preferred carriers. Otherwise, the Amazon help pages aren't very helpful in detailing how I actually get my stuff from my house to their warehouse. I presume that Amazon's preferred carriers offers discounts for going to Amazon, and I presume I book that through Seller Central rather than parcelforce.com. Basically, Ben, yeah, this is a fairly simple one. You are quite right. You book it through Seller Central. When you say Amazon's help pages aren't very helpful, that's the understatement of the century. They are basically bury the information that you need somehow. So this is why you need things like this podcast or the Facebook group or, you know, other Facebook groups, whatever, other websites. So yeah, basically what you'll do is you'll go to inventory and then underneath that, so this is the top sort of bar, what do you call it? The top set of menus, basically. And you go to inventory, then you go down and you go to manage inventory, and then you will find your product listing. And on the left, you click on the little checkbox, and then you have a drop-down box, which will give you an option amongst many, many other options for send/replenish inventory. If you click on that, you will get taken through to set up a shipping plan. That is actually something that I've done a video for as part of the video series. So if you want to join our email list and get hold of that, you'll be at www.amazingfba.com/welcome. And you can get onto our email list and you will get a series of videos sent. And you also get access through that to the Insiders Club, which has got several videos and a couple of documents available for you as well. So check that one out, Ben. That will help you a great deal. Now, interestingly, somebody else came in. Stuart mentioned that unless I've missed something, my experience of using Amazon's preferred carrier UPS only applies when shipping from within a particular country. So if you're shipping from UK to FBA in the UK, the rates are fantastic. However, when shipping from the UK to FBA in the US, there are no special rates. I have found using Transglobal Express to be very competitive, and they use UPS as well as other carriers. So that's a very useful hint. Thanks, Stuart. So presumably you're doing that in order to send some samples or some small amounts of inventory that you have over to the US just in order to test out the product. That's never going to be a very efficient process. So I would always advise you to go straight from the supplier to the US unless you have a lot of spare units left over. I mean, just place a small order, even go to AliExpress or something and just get a quick order sent. Obviously, if you've already got an existing supplier, don't use AliExpress. But basically, in other words, get it sent from China to the USA. Sending from the UK to the USA, having had it sent from China to the UK, that doesn't really make much sense. I mean, unless you really are talking small quantities. Now, an interesting one from Ben again, who says, guys, I'd be interested in your take on this idea, especially Michael Veazey after the last two podcasts. So I presume that he was talking about the interview with Anthony Lee that I did. And if you want to check that out, that was episodes 49 and 50, which would be at www.amazingfba.com/49 and /50, respectively. And Ben says, I've heard some stories of people sending off their branding to suppliers to get branded samples. And when they choose another supplier, the unsuccessful suppliers have gone and made stuff with their branding and sold it on to other people, or just gone ahead and stuck it on Amazon themselves. What are your thoughts about getting samples made with test branding? For example, my branding with watermarks over the top. That way I can still see the quality of the branding process and can still see roughly what my branding looks like, but I'm protected. So interesting question, Ben. I like the thought, first of all, it's an imaginative approach to quite a tricky little area, and I might even try that myself. But this raises a couple of interesting points. So first of all, yes, it's a bit of a danger. It does happen. I've been advised by my mentor in the past to make sure that I, you know, don't let that happen myself. Firstly, short term, nobody really cares about your brand. Don't over worry about it. But yes, you don't really want your brand out in the marketplace associated with somebody else's, you know, sales, if possible. So I like the idea that you're testing the quality of printing, but protecting your brand. And for that matter, if you all you want to see is the quality of printing, you could use a different brand altogether. But it's a good idea. I like your thinking. The only thing I would say is that if you're going to do this, if you decide to go ahead with the supplier, you should probably get another sample done with your actual logo anyway. So in other words, if you want to get a quick sense of the quality of samples, once you've chosen your suppliers, then I would go straight to just send me your samples that you have available. Check those three out, probably three or four, and then maybe choose a couple to create your own sample from as well. It could be argued that it's just as quick to get your sample made. I have to admit that in the past, I have just ordered a main sample, and then I've got them to produce a sample of the product with my logo on it and actually not bother sending it to me, but to actually just take a photo and send it through. And if it's a good resolution photo, I can see, and I can see that the quality is good. The reason I'm mentioning all this stuff is speed, right? So money loves speed. is the phrase, right? Now, unfortunately, quality doesn't love speed, and there is always that trade-off between speed and quality. If you want to be original, that takes more time, that takes more back and forth, that takes more design works, more investment up front, but should protect your brand long-term and give you a bit more competition protection by differentiating, enable you to charge higher prices. Many, many, many good things, right? But if you find a nice product niche, as in supply and demand is balanced in your favor, I would get in there quickly. So the only thing I would say is that all this stuff sounds very good, but just keep the process moving, okay? That is one thing I would say. So if you want to check the quality of printing of logos from your chosen suppliers, once you've got a supplier, I'd order a proper sample with your real logo. But, you know, like I said, there's always that trade-off. So a good professional process in place and protecting your IP and your brand is excellent. IP being intellectual property, that's a new concept for you. But just make sure that it doesn't take you months to get to market with a good but not amazing product, right? So I made that mistake with my first product. It took me about 6 months to get to market with a good product with my logo on it, but which was pretty much the same as everybody else's. Then what happened by that stage is that competition had come in and I had to really fight to get onto page one. And I basically kept sliding off page one onto page two, unless I dropped the price to the point where the sales took off like a rocket, but then I wasn't making any profit. In fact, I was making a gentle loss on each unit. Okay. So I think my overall approach to this, and this is a sort of big picture thinking, which I'm coalescing together from various different people that I've spoken to who will know their onions, like Anthony Lee and Will Churnland and Greg Mercer, is like a sort of my own digested version, if you like, my melted down version of this stuff. And you have to do that for yourself. My version is to basically get going as quick as you can and then learn about the realities of trying to sell your product, listing optimization, handling AdWords, get feedback from the customers, etc. When I say feedback, I mean product reviews from the customers. Then you have some choices. You can simply abandon that product if the quality is too low or if it's not profitable. If the quality is okay, but it needs some tweaks, you can go back to your supplier and customize the product in response to the customer's feedback, aka reviews. Or if the qualities and sales are profit are good and it all looks good as it is, just go back and reorder. But either way, you're getting momentum. So don't underestimate the importance of momentum. So money loves speed, quality doesn't. There's this eternal conundrum. So my advice is what my mum used to say, which is the perfect is the enemy of the good. Get it good and get it out there and see what happens. And my mentor was recently giving me a hard time about that as well, and just saying, look, you need to throw some spaghetti at the wall, as she put it politely, and see what sticks sometimes, because I've been procrastinating and being as perfectionist as anybody else. Now, actually, I've got better at moving fast. I sometimes make things overcomplicated. I think we all do. Now, this sounds like quite an elegant solution to the problem. So if you are listening, Ben, don't get me wrong. I think it's actually quite a good solution. Just be careful that you don't get overcautious and that you lose momentum, because actually momentum is probably the best protection you have against the competition as much as anything else. Someone like Will Churnland is a glowing example of that. Manuel Beckfar, who I've just interviewed for the podcast, and that interview will be coming out, in fact, in episode 51, which was the first part of that interview, will have come out yesterday on Monday. And he's kind of the opposite in the sense that he takes a great deal of trouble over quality and goes back and forth with suppliers. But bear in mind, he's based in Hong Kong. He knows thousands of suppliers. He doesn't have to waste a lot of time going looking for suppliers, and he can go back and forth and get good deals. He's very, very slick with that process. So that isn't going to represent a huge waste of time for him. Whereas if you're based in the UK or even in the USA or Germany or wherever, I know some of our listeners are in India, Germany, Australia as well, so welcome guys, then obviously it's going to take a long time to get samples sent back and forth. So he's in a slightly different situation. My take on it going forwards more and more is, you know, get started with some form of product and then customize a bit later down the line if you think that there is, you know, good feedback from the marketplace, i.e. you've got a live product, not a duff one, right? Anyway, so that's it, folks. Thank you very, very much for listening in. Thank you very much to the people who are in there asking questions and especially answering them and giving their take on it and their experience in the Facebook group. There are about 325 members now, so it's that Goldilocks stage, guys. It's not too big to be so, you know, overwhelming that you get lost in it. It's not so small that there's nothing happening. It's a very nice sized group, and it's got some good people in there at a certain sort of level, and then quite a few sort of more expert people with a lot more experience. So it's an interesting mix. The other thing I would say is that I have had my mentor holding me accountable absolutely invaluable. Her prices have recently gone up quite sharply. So this is an indication of what happens with good people. They get into demand, guys. So if you are interested in working with me for mentoring, my prices are also going to go up over time. I'm not going to bore you with that now, but if you want to look at the detail, we are on waiting list only at the moment. So you probably will find that still true if you're listening to this down the line. But go to mentoring page at amazingfba.com, www.amazingfba.com/mentoring. You can read all the details of what's involved there, what you get, what the costs are, what the process is. You do have to do it by application only. As I say, we are on waiting list only. But whether it's me or somebody else, I really, really urge you to get a mentor and to get a mastermind group as well. The Facebook group community is an excellent start, but I think everyone ends up on Facebook communities and they eventually die off if they don't have a physical meeting component. That is something that I am planning for the group at some point. It's not imminent because I need to have enough people to make it worthwhile hiring hotel rooms, etc. But that is something coming up. If you're interested in that idea, come back to the Facebook group as ever and let me know your thoughts.
Hey, this is John Lee Dumas of EO Fire, and you're listening to Amazing FBA with the marvelous Michael Veazey, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. You must be prepared to ignite.
Thanks to John Lee Dumas there of Entrepreneur on Fire for that wonderful audio bumper. That was my reward for leaving him a podcast review on iTunes. And you can get the same thing. Just go to www.amazingfba.com/iTunes review or go to the blog amazingfba.com and look for leave an iTunes review in the menu bar, and then you just need to leave a review, take a screenshot of it. If it takes you 24 hours to get the review, don't panic. Then email that to me at michael@amazingfba.com. Phew, so why do this? Well, because I will offer you in exchange, in return, a free email consultation on your biggest Amazon problem right now. This is normally only available to members of my mentees. There's only six of them at the moment, and it's sort of between five or six people. So it's very, very limited access to me on email. If you otherwise email with your questions, I will simply respond. You need to put it up in the Facebook group. So I can't give you one-to-one help normally, but this is your opportunity to get it. So if you want to do that, guys, just leave an iTunes review, take a screenshot, email it to me along with your question, michael@amazingfba.com, and I will personally answer your query in detail. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. I really appreciate it. Now, over to you. First, 80-20 everything. Learn the critical few. Maybe there's one thing in this podcast that can make all the difference. Find that thing. 20% of inputs, give 80% of the outputs. Which are the critical few for you? Then take action. Imperfect action beats perfect inaction every single time. Finally, and not least, review. If you've made mistakes, learn from them. If you've made a success, duplicate it. You can't do that unless you look back. So in summary, learn the critical few, then do, then review. And then, my friend, it's up to you. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. Speak to you in the next episode.